So we're going to actually go through this the rest of the weekend. And what this is, it's a chart of the journey that while we were all very unique, there's also certain commonalities to the human heart and to the masculine heart. And so we'll kind of go through these stages, and you might go, well, why are we going through the 18 to 30 stage? I'm 47, I'm 59, I'm whatever it is. Because these questions, these things we're going through are universal. And like all things in our life, there are things that if we miss, we can go back to and get. We'll go through two of these stages now, and then we'll go through some others later. When you look at this chart, you know, as you see, there's nothing magical about these numbers on here. 18 to 30, 30 to 40, 40 to 50, 55 up. But there is something defining about decade birthdays. There just is. And there's something kind of defining about 18. But we'll go through that in a second. But as you look at this chart, in the early part of our life, it seems like what God is most after is awakening our desires. So we're in school or we're doing different things, our first job, and so things are coming up. He's awakening our desires. And as we get older, he's deepening those, our understanding of those desires, what it's really about, what it really means. And then it seems like the greatest fulfillment of who we are to the world comes through the latter part of our life. And it makes sense if there's an awakening, deepening, and fulfilling process. The next line is the early part of our life is a lot about our potential. God's developing our potential, all that we could be. He's bringing out things. And then towards, as we go later in our life, then it's far more about purpose, which is much more focused, right? Not just our potential, but our purpose. The other thing is that when we look at the early part of our life, most of our decisions are pretty recoverable. I mean, they just are. You know, so you blow it, you got to repeat the class. Yes, it's a little bit more money and time, but it's, you know, you look at it, it's not a big deal. Yeah, you blow it and the girl won't go out with you anymore, but you find another girlfriend. You know what I mean? Yeah, you blow it, but you know, you got years to make up that debt, pay that thing off because you shouldn't have spent that much money on a car. What, you know, whatever it is, most things are very recoverable. But the truth is, as we get older, they are less easily recoverable. It's a bigger impact and so on. The reason I bring that up is because in the early part of our life, I think it really is designed for us to try a lot of things. It's just a learning time, right? So you just go try something. So you blew it. You can recover. Later on, we're supposed to have more wisdom. We've learned from things. And so therefore, you know what? You just can't experiment with everything when you get older. You start to understand that. But the early part of our life should be, go learn. Try 10 different things. It's okay. You know, it's not the early thought of, well, you know, son, you need to get in that job. You need to show a lot of time in this. Because if you got too many jobs, they're going to look at that and say, what's wrong with you? Well, first of all, people don't look at it that way. Secondly, I'm looking for a guy who's had a lot of experience. You know, he's tried about 10 different things. I bet he learned something. So early part of our life, we're learning things just by trying. The next thing is that the early part of our life truly is about receiving. It's mostly about receiving, right? We're receiving experience, information, wisdom, lessons. We're growing. And it's much more in the latter part of our life that most of it's about giving. We have a lot to give now. Now, the ironic part is that what happens to most of us is we think the early part of our life, it's about giving. Get in there. Start making a contribution, and it should be, no, just learn. Just take it in. There's a lot to receive out there. And the ironic part is, like, as well, as you get to the later part of your life and you're going, you know, I don't have that much to give. I don't know. I didn't live that well, or I don't, you know. And so we get to live, we almost think we're living the opposite way. The beginning, we have so much to give and little to receive when we should be receiving. At the end of our life, we can go, I don't have that much to give, and we don't give much. It's just the opposite. You know that scripture where Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature, right? Wisdom, understanding, stature literally means physically just growing up, strength, and in favor with God and man. That's just so much of the process in the first part of our life. But that's what God's up to in the beginning. And yet, again, most of us grew up under, hey, get on with it, get serious about life, get that job. It should be, no, just grow in wisdom and in stature and favor with God and man. And so when I look at these, and again, we'll go through these, you know, the 18 to 30 age bracket, I would say, really are the learning years. I mean, it's just about learning, really. And then in 30s, really about building, and we'll go through these again. 40 to 55, it's really the focusing years. And then 55 on, again, not these aren't hard and fast numbers here, but it's the investing years. And it just helps with perspective when we look at some of these things. And so if you put it in terms of the way of the wild heart, it's the shepherding years, the warrior years, the king years, and the sage years. What we're going to do as far as a grid down on the left-hand side is we're going to look at what are the key questions for these years. Because you're going to find out not only is it a key question, but they're very sequential as well. You have to answer one to answer the next one. You know, what are the traits, what are the greatest dangers, and what are the needs during these times? Now again, you may be looking at this going, I haven't been in my 20s for a long time. What does this have to do with me? Well, it helps make sense of your life. It helps bring interpretation maybe to what happened or what didn't and why things have been the way they are. Everything's recoverable with God. It truly is. You just go back and you may say, oh, that's why God is doing this with me now. He's going back to something that should have happened in my 20s that didn't. He's just fathering me in that way. And it really helps you with another man, because you can look at a 20-something and go, I have some ideas for you. I can help you interpret your life. I have some questions to ask you. I have some things to say, some feedback. Let's go through these. You know, 18 to 30, it's a unique time because typically, and I would say the way it should be, it should be the beginning of you being on your own. You know, some of us were pushed out way too early to be on our own, but typically this should be the time. Maybe you go off to college, right? So now you're living on your own away from your parents. You know, you've got to make decisions about the classes you're going to take and the major you're going to have. You're for the first time, you've got the weight of decisions on your life. It's maybe the first time that you literally own your own car and you're paying insurance. And it's probably the time you got your first job. It may be the first time you got serious about a girl. It's just on your own living where all of a sudden life starts changing at this point. Now, the unfortunate part is those who have had to be on their own earlier than this, or those who are hitting their 40s and just walking into this for the first time, being on their own. At this point in your life, one of the big questions should be, really, who am I? And what is it that I believe? Now, can I be 54 years old and asking the question, who am I? Sure, I can be asking that. That's a question you're always asking, but that should be the focus of this time in our life, is who am I? Because again, it's the first time you get to make all these decisions and realize that was not a good decision, or that was a great decision, or man, I love this subject. So it's just a key time. You know, I know for me, when I was in school, I went into business pretty much because my dad told me to go into business. He was a business guy, and he basically said, you got to get a degree so you can make money and make life work for you. And so I did. But, you know, it was fascinating going in and having certain classes and hating them. And one, it could be obviously because of the way the person taught the class. But there are certain subjects where, you know, you're fascinated. And as I said in the calling retreat, that curiosity is often the initial experience of our greatest desire. Right, it's that thing where you go, oh, I'm fascinated by that. I want to read more, even if I don't have to, and I want to ask questions about it. And so I just found myself, you know, I had the freshman psych class. I was absolutely fascinated. It was the most interesting thing in the world. This whole idea of how does the human brain work, how does a personality work, I loved it. And then I had a marketing course, and that was kind of a business psychology, if you will, you know, and I just found myself absolutely loving this. I was astonished that I actually enjoyed this kind of thing. But see, it was the beginning of starting to discover who I am. Didn't quite know what to do with it, but it's the beginning of that very thing. This idea of starting to learn what I truly believe. You know the truth, right? Doctrinal statements that you might sign if you're in a church and they make you sign a doctrinal statement before you can be an elder or deacon. Those doctrinal statements mean nothing. You can sign any piece of paper. It really doesn't matter. It's a great conversation piece, but the truth is, you and I know very little of what we truly believe, actually. You can tell me what you believe, but what you really believe comes out of your behavior, honestly. It does for me, it does for you. And so we're always kind of learning what we really believe. Honestly, God bless you over at this table. This is the H1N1 table. Just kidding. Okay, what you believe? Okay. So let me give you an example. When I graduated from college, I went on staff with Campus Crusade for Christ. I'm going to hit that in a few minutes too, what happened. But here's a really interesting thing. I go on staff. My father is not happy about going into a job where you beg for money. He was so unhappy about that. He said, "Why doesn't believe that?" Made no sense to him. And so I go on staff and actually raise support fairly quickly, at least to my father's viewpoint. And I think within the first year, we get to the point where, and I hated this. We didn't get paid. There wasn't enough support. And I remember we went to McDonald's because we had nothing to eat in the house. And I remember the humiliation of literally being at the counter with people in back of me and counting pennies. I mean, penny after penny, and sweating it that I was going to have enough. And I thought, I just never, ever want to do this again. This is so humiliating. So there's that experience. Shortly after that, I remember Lee and I are sitting in our house. We've got nothing to eat in the house, and we have no money. Now, we're not going to starve to death, okay? We can all live for days without food. We're just sitting there, and I feel again, so humiliated as a man, as the one trying to provide for my family, got nothing. And we're just sitting there, and Lee's going, "Well, we'll be fine." The neighbor next to us knocks on the door. We barely know this guy. We're in this apartment complex. We just have kind of met him. He knocks on the door, and I'm kind of surprised that he's there, because we only talk if we happen to see each other in the parking lot. And he's kind of a nice guy. Knocks on the door, and he says, "Hey," he said, "I was just fishing this afternoon, and I caught a couple fish, so here's a fish for you." It was amazing. I mean, this guy had no idea. And so he brings in this fish, gives it to me. You know, I hadn't even had a fillet of fish. I didn't know, you know, I'm used to the fish fillet at McDonald's. I don't know how to fillet a fish. So we get this fish, you know, and I don't even know what it was, actually, what he caught. And so he closed the door. We thank him. Lee says, I don't think I like fish. And I said, "I think we better eat fish. I think God just gave us fish to eat." But it was just an amazing experience. And here, no one knows. This guy comes to the door, doesn't know us, gives us a fish, and God provides. And I mean, I had to wrestle with, what was that about? You know, what is this having no money about? This is pissing me off. And then this guy comes to the door. Is this God? Is this the way he does things? And I remember this, and this was 29 years ago. That was one of the times God was getting to me about, what do you really believe about me and you? What do you believe really goes on here? See, that's what God is up to. And so many times we rescue people, and God says, no, don't do that. I'm teaching him something. Or we try to rescue ourselves, and he said, yeah, good luck with that, because I'm teaching you something. And that's what God does. He teaches us what we really believe, what we in our heart, and what we should believe, and what's in us. So one more example, okay, on this what do you believe thing. Okay, so now let me go back before I came on staff. So I'm in college, I'm in my senior year, 2 months before I graduate, the director of Athletes in Action, which is part of Campus Crusade, calls me up on the phone. My roommate and I, the guy who actually led me to Christ, he stayed an extra year, he redshirted 1 year as a gymnast, I was a gymnast, just to kind of hang with me. We are on a double date. We have girls over for dinner. We didn't do it much because we were so busy with gymnastics. I mean, it was the center of my life. Hey, gymnastics season's over. We're about to graduate. We've got girls over. We're fixing dinner in the kitchen, you know, and it's just a fun evening. The phone rings. I go pick it up. That's before they had, what's it called?
Answering machines
and caller ID. Yeah, caller ID is a great thing. So I pick up the phone, and not that I didn't like this guy, but it's the director of Athletes in Action Gymnastics. And he calls me and he says, "Hey, Gary, what are you going to do with your life? You're graduating in 2 months. What does God want you to do?" And I was not in the mood to talk about what God wants me to do because, first, I had no idea, you know, and it wasn't the evening I was planning on. And so he starts asking me these questions, and I'm thinking, I got to get this guy off the phone. So I'm thinking, okay, I've been around Campus Crusade for a long time. What are their words? What do they need to hear? What's big on for them? And so I thought, well, they always talk about fulfilling the Great Commission in our generation. That's kind of their phrase. And of course, evangelism's right in there, you know, and, you know, walking in the Spirit's right in there. So I got the keywords. I can play this man. So I told them, I said, you know, what God wants me to do, it's just not good to do this kind of thing. It's just religious posing, you know. And so I said, well, what God wants me to do is he wants me to start gymnastic centers around the country, where I can share the gospel and the power of the Holy Spirit in order to help fulfill the Great Commission in our generation. I thought, this man's going to love me. And he just didn't respond on the phone. He just went silent. And then he said, "Can I pray for you?" I mean it. I'd never had anybody pray for me on a telephone. I didn't think you could do that. I just thought, can you really do that? And so I just said, sure. I mean, I didn't know what else to say. And so he just prayed this. I mean, again, I can remember this distinctly. And he just said, "Father, I pray that you would make Gary miserable if he does not walk in your will. Amen." Literally, that was the prayer. That was the prayer. And instantly, now this has never happened to me since then, so I'm not coming up with a new way God works. Instantly, I was miserable. I mean, all of a sudden, my heart was so unsettled, like nothing was right in the world anymore. And so I think, I don't know what we said after that. It was a short conversation after that. I think he said maybe, "Hey, let me call you back in a couple weeks." I don't know what it was. I was out by that point. And so I literally walked back in the kitchen where we had set up and we were eating. And I just kind of sat down and then I said, "You know what? I'm not feeling very good." I said, can I take you home? I'm sorry. I just don't feel good." And I took her back to her apartment and I went up to my room. I mean, the night was over. I was so miserable. And all I can say was, everything in the world was wrong with my heart. That's all I could say. I wasn't sick and I wasn't kind of under conviction, whatever that is. I just was miserable. And so next morning got up, beautiful spring morning. And I remember my roommates were gone, so they just went off to go do something. And I must have slept in. And I thought, it's a beautiful morning. And so I got on my bike and I'm just riding around campus and I wasn't enjoying the morning. It was a morning to be enjoyed, but I couldn't enjoy it. I was just riding around and, man, I couldn't stop the argument in my head, everything being off in the world in my heart. Finally, I stopped riding around, put my bike down, sat under the shade, and I said, "God, I give up. Just stop this. Whatever you're doing to me, stop it. And if I have to do something to make you stop it, I'll do it. Just make it clear." And I felt like God said, "Well, I want you to go on staff with Athletes in Action." And I did not want to do that. And so I finally said, "Okay, all right, I'll go through that if you make this stop. I just know this is probably worse right now, whatever." And instantly it stopped. Now again, I'm not giving you a formula. It just was my experience. This is what God personally did with me in this time, and he hasn't done something like that since. I mean, it's like everything was right again. All of a sudden it was nice out, the air smelled sweet. I mean, it was weird. And I said, "Okay." And then all of a sudden saying okay wasn't that bad anymore. I thought, well, yeah, what's the big deal? So I do this for a little bit, big deal. So I said yes to God, and then I started saying no. I said, "Well, I told him yes, but that doesn't mean I need to do it. At least he made this stop. He'll probably forget about this conversation." And then sure enough, in the next week, I'm having a quiet time in the morning, and I'm reading Scripture, and the Scripture from Luke 12:48 comes up, and it says this: "From everyone who has been given much, much will be required." And I might have read it before, and I read this, and it's one of those times where this verse that didn't mean much before, all of a sudden it's just heavy on your heart. And I'm going, "Oh man, I can't get over that verse. I'm not even sure what it means, but I can't get beyond the verse." And I just had to say, "All right, God, what do you mean by that for me?" And what I sense God saying is, "Gary, I've given you a good life. I gave you gymnastics. That gave you a scholarship to college. You have enjoyed it. Now I need something from you. It was for a reason. And it was to go with Athletes in Action gymnastics, where, we'd perform and share our faith." So I tell you what, it made me wrestle with God. Does he speak or doesn't he speak? What's he like? Would he actually do that to me, make me miserable to get me to do something? So God will do those kind of things to you to help you start believing the right things about him at a deep level. But that's what he's about. That's what he does. He's working after answering the question, who am I and what do I really believe? So we're going to go into the traits. Before we do that, I'm going to take you through some scenes in the movie The Karate Kid. Okay, so in this particular scene, Daniel and his mother, they move from New Jersey to Southern California. So the poor kid, I mean, he gets uprooted from his friends and everything else, and that's disturbing. But also he's come into such a different culture, from the East Coast to the West Coast. And his life is totally turned upside down. I mean, you talk about a time of trying to figure out, who am I and what do I really believe? So just to give you a picture of that, this scene. The 18 to 30s, a lot of it is and should be this thought of, I don't know how things work. I don't get the rules anymore. It really is supposed to be that disturbing time that, one, makes you think about, who am I really and what do I really believe? It really is the searching and verifying time, the traits. This is the time you're just searching out. How do things work? How do relationships work? How do getting serious about a girl, how does that work? How does college work? How does finances work? I mean, I'm on my own now. I got to figure out how to make this. it really is supposed to be that time. And when we narrow a young man's life into something other than struggling to try to figure this out, we're taking something from him. It's really a searching and verifying who we are and how things work. It really should be a time of broad learning. You know, it's just go learn this. Learn this about leadership. Learn this about Christianity. Learn this about finances. Learn this about nature. Just learn. It's broad learning time. Okay, it really should be that for us. Again, going back to the idea of awakening desires, you know, of potential, of all those things of receiving, growing in wisdom and stature. It really should be all of that. It's going back to that idea. Remember, what I like best about experience is that it's such an honest thing. You just need to experience a lot of things so that you can have an honest evaluation of who you are and how things really work. It should be that broad learning on all of those things. The dangers. Okay, the greatest dangers really in this time is that you just don't know yourself. So you're doing things and making decisions without much of a knowledge base there. That's a danger. You're untested as a man, as a young man. You just haven't tried much yet, and that's okay. It's just part of the dangers of these times. You're just untested. So let me take you back to the Karate Kid. So what Daniel realizes is he needs to be able to fight. And, you know, again, this is a karate movie, and it's not about fighting, but he just realizes as a man, he needs to have some strength. He needs to be able to stand up to some things and face some things. He meets the kind of caretaker of the apartment complex. So he meets Miyagi. Miyagi's the guy, again, caretaker, but he's this karate guy, kind of a mystery. And so Miyagi realizes what's going on. He's having conversations with them. And then he sits down and he says, let's get serious about some things. What do you want? And let's talk about how to get there. And Miyagi has a very surprising encounter to Daniel on what karate is all about and how it's going to work. That's such a great scene. I mean, when he said, right, left, middle, you know, karate do, karate not do. Jesus said, you'd be hot or cold. This in-between thing's not going to work. And yet Daniel has no idea what he really means. And I love what he says, here's the deal. I promise to teach, you do what I say. Agreed? Agreed. He has no idea what he just agreed to. None. And does that not happen with us, right? We come to God, he says, great, I'll teach you. Great. You do what I say. Oh, yeah. You know, we have no idea. And right away, he's going, just do what I say. It's just what this part of our life is supposed to be like, right? It's just growing. It's just God brings us into these situations and we're going, what a waste of time. He's going, oh, no, you have no idea how important this is going to be for you. So it just is that time. We're untested, so God is testing us. You know, we can say, blew it. Well, maybe you blew it, but you're being tested. You're just growing into something because you don't know yourself yet. The other characteristic of this time is it's just we have a weak inner life, typically. We just haven't developed much. And the idea of having this weak inner life, because everything in our life has pointed to the outside of our life, right? Gain a skill, get through school, get the grades, get a job, get some money, but very little emphasis is on the inside. That just means we are just real susceptible to seduction. Seduction from money, seduction from women, seduction from pleasure, whatever it is, we're just susceptible because our inner life is so weak. It's just part of us growing up. And then, of course, the other danger is the pressure of having to figure it out. My dad said, well, son, graduate in a couple of months. What are you going to do with your life? Put a lot of money into this. I have no idea. College did not help me answer that question. I mean, it gave me some clues. If anything, it just gave me a little bit of credibility in the work world. That's it. But that just does not help to tell a young man, what are you going to do with your life? You ought to know by now. No, you ought not know by now, actually. Because if I get a young man, he says, I know exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. I am very suspicious of that guy right now. You know, if he goes, I have no idea, I'm going, good. You ought to not know at this point. You will. It's just a characteristic of that time because of this developmental thing. So what is needed? So before we go to that, let's go back to Miyagi. Okay, this is such a great scene. Miyagi has been training him, but Daniel has no idea. So he starts with this, you know, wax on, wax off, you know, the famous Karate Kid stuff. Daniel's been washing and waxing the cars. He's been painting the fence. He's been painting the house. He's been doing all this stuff. And he is just really fed up of this stuff right now. This makes no sense. This is a waste of my time. You're jerking me. Don't do this anymore. He is mad. And at this point, Miyagi has to say, no, let me pull the shade up and let you see what's literally going on. Okay, and just what he says to him. That is a great picture of the mentoring of God in our life, isn't it? I still go, why do I have to do this? This is stupid. Why does this happen? And God's saying, okay, show me, paint the fence. You know, I hate painting the fence. You know, and I'm going to show you how important this is. I mean, this is what God is up to our whole life, and he'll give you a glimpse. But we have to believe that God is up to something in our life. Oh, that's stupid. That's on the side. That's secular. That's whatever. No, God is up to something. First of all, it's all his kingdom. It's all his world. It's all the story. It's all battle. It's all this. And God is up to something. See, if you stop and look back and go, God, what was that about my life back then? I never could figure that out. What was that about? That was about something. And so one, you need to go back in your life because he has been developing you and training you and me. And he's been doing that in everyone else's life. So even as you're hearing stories, you're thinking, I wonder what God was up to in that. And you'll start seeing, you go, oh, you know what I think he was bringing up in you? He was teaching you this about belief. He was giving you this skill, this discernment, this understanding. He was awakening this. He's up to things. That's what he does in your life and in the lives of other men. So what's needed here is exposure and experience. That's part of our life. Just to be exposed to things. How does it work to live in the world of men? How do you relate to a woman? How does that work? Well, you know, it's like my oldest son. He's very intellectual, loves to read. He's a deep thinker. And I keep saying, Jesse, you're doing great, buddy. But take a girl out and learn what it means to be out with a woman. Just, even if you don't like her, you just have to learn. You know, just take her out. Use her in that way, you know. You know what I mean? I don't mean physically, but just get some experience here, man. Take her out. Learn how to have a conversation and carry it on and... You just need to have experience. You know how to work, how to relate, how to date, how to think, how to read, how to write. It goes on and on. How to speak. We just need exposure and experience. We really do. Because it's a time of understanding ourselves. And we need fathers. We need Miyagis in our life. We really do. At that stage. And for most of our life, actually. We just need Miyagi-type men. And the only way you're ever going to find a man at this point in your life or when you were younger is you just have to ask. You know, most men don't think they have much to offer, right? Like I said in this chart, at the later part of our life, it should be mostly about giving. We have much to give. But the ironic thing is we don't think we have much to give the older we get. And so most men don't give to younger men because they don't think they have anything to offer. And so younger men have to ask. I have to ask. I mean, I met with this man who's mentored me for years. We haven't met for over a year. We've both kind of gone different ways in our life, in good ways. But I called him and said, I just need to meet with you. And we had 3 hours of just catching up. And Paul, can I ask you about this? And how are you living now? How do you pace your life? And what do you do about this? And I have to ask. It's just what we all have to do. It's not just easier for others and harder for other people. And it really is a time of impact participation. I had the word ministry there, but I took it out because I don't like the word ministry. Because again, it's ministry and then secular in everybody's mind, right? It's just forget that. You just participate in having impact. Whatever it looks, just go sign up for everything as a young man. Go try it. Go on a mission trip. Try this at your church. Try this with the rescue mission. Try this in your place of work. Go try stuff. Participate in things. Because you learn a lot. You need exposure. So let's go to the next phase now. So we've done the 20-somethings, really up to 30. The learning years, because it truly is learning. Now let's go to the building years, the 30s now. You see, the second question that comes up in our heart is this now. So where's my place? If you have answered the question, who am I, to some degree, then it begs the question, so where's my place in all of this that's going on? Where do I fit, in other words? But that is impossible to answer if you haven't started to answer the first question. But needless to say, in your 30s, this question is going to come up, whether you answered the first one or not. Now you have two questions haunting you. That's the hard part for all of us, okay? This 30s time, this is really kind of a time of settling down, right? You know, in the 20s, it's kind of like you're, you know, maybe off to college, maybe not. Maybe off to this job, off to this. You live over here, you live over there. But the 30s, things usually start settling down. You might be married by now, so you're more settled. You're not running around as much. You know, you're more maybe settled into a home. Maybe you're settled more into work. So it's more of a settled time. But that, and that's partly why the question is, so where is my place in this? I'm going to take you now just through a little bit of the story in the movie Iron Man. This is such a great picture of a 30-something, running and gunning in his 20s, making things happen. This is such a great picture of this really cocky, I got the world, you know, by its whatever you want to use in metaphor. And it's just a great, so let's watch this. Great picture, 30-something here. Oh, talk about a man wrestling about what he believes and who he is and finding his place. He's convinced he found his place, you know. I mean, it's just that cocky, I gotcha, you know. It's just such a funny picture of that. And most men get to that place. In some way in their world, they get to that place, you know. I got it. And if you've seen the story, you realize how disrupted his life has to get. This is a time of questioning, you know. Part of the trait is questioning and adjusting. If the first part is about searching and verifying, this is now going back and questioning everything that you have been searching and verifying. Really? Does it really work like that? Because it doesn't seem like that. Am I really like that? I thought I was, but really? You know, and it's verifying. Let me just try this. It's a time of more narrowed learning. You know, in the 20s, you should be learning everything. Just read everything, learn everything, get some exposure. But now in the 30s, you're starting to narrow the learning. There's a few things I want to learn now. As it should be. It really should be. It is a time of being work-oriented. See, in the 20s, it's a very self-oriented time in a good way. If you have to answer the question, who am I and what do I believe, it should be a self-oriented time. I mean, it should be, yeah, you need to be thinking about that. And yeah, you know, do you enjoy that? Do you not enjoy it? That's good. But in your 30s, it becomes far more work-oriented. Because if the question is, where's my place? And you're settling down, it becomes very work-oriented. Am I good at this? Do I want to stay in this? You know, am I going to get booted out of this? Or do I have a future here? It just becomes very work-oriented in one sense. The other sense is, what do I have to contribute, really? So it's a work-oriented time. So let me show you one more clip. So you see him here. So he's this cocky guy. I mean, all these powerful people are just listening to him at his mercy. So what happens is he drives off. There's an attack. He gets captured by the enemy because the enemy's saying, we want your weapons. You give us your weapons now. And so he realizes that if he does produce weapons for him, they'll kill him anyway when he's done. And he's going to die either way. And he is now faced with his own mortality for the first time. And there's another man there that says, Tony Stark, you've done a lot, but you got bigger questions to answer. You got to think about some things seriously. Here's where the searching and verifying, questioning and adjusting comes in. See, it's really fascinating how we really don't face our life until something gets really hard. It just is true. I mean, I'd like to think, you know, I know the deep issues of life, and I know how to go after the purpose of my life and all, and I'll do that. I don't really do that until it gets really hard or I get desperate. And it's just true. I mean, God will just keep taking us through these things. And I love when he says, is this going to be the legacy of your life? I mean, that is one of the core bottom line questions. What is going to be the legacy of your life? We all have to ask that question. And he asks them that, right? And he goes, well, it doesn't matter. I'm going to be dead in, you know, a week. And the answer is, well, then I think this is a very important week for you. You know, that's just such a great thing. You better get busy going to those questions. It's questioning and adjusting our life. So the dangers. At this point in our life, we tend to be very driven by expectations of other people. We're in our 20s, we're running and gunning, we're trying to make something, and so we are driven by the expectations of work. It really goes back to the scene that we saw from The Incredibles, where he's snapping his fingers, come here, let me tell you how it works here and how you're going to work. You know, it's just that we get driven by expectations of work, of church, of friends. That's a danger. We lose our own script and take on everybody else's script. The danger is just doing overrides being, right? Again, you already have a weak inner life because you're young, but now all the doing overrides who you are in being. There's no intimacy in your life. Let me show you this next clip. So he escapes from the caves with the enemy, and now he's realizing, I barely escape with my life. I mean, how am I supposed to live? What am I about? What is right? What's wrong? And so I want you to see this scene now. Of course, this is now where the woman walks into the scene as well. And he is really getting to this searching and questioning and adjusting point in his life. He's come to this point now where he's able to say, there's the next mission and nothing else. He's now questioning his life and he's verifying and adjusting, this is the way I want to live. And you know, in the past I learned, but this is what I'm doing now. And I love the statement, right? I shouldn't be alive unless there is a reason for it. Right? He's wrestling with that, which is what we are all supposed to do. And you know, that final statement, I mean, we all want to be able to say, I just finally know what I have to do. That's where we should be going, right? Answering, who am I and now where's my place? What's my mission? No intimacy. Let me just share this with you. In my life, when I was in my 30s, I learned this from my wife in my 40s, how much I hurt her. You know, she said, Gary, you were just not here much in your 30s. You know, and now I literally traveled a lot, but she said, even when you were here, you were already at work anyway. And you know, part of the problem is I loved my work. I literally loved my work. But she said, I was pretty much alone for at least a decade in my life. Had raised our kids alone. I was alone. And I'm thinking, I was not, you know, I was home. And she kept saying, Gary, you weren't home. And I really, really, really hurt her. I mean, in a sense, there was no intimacy. And she used to say to me, Gary, when we go out, like when we're out in public, why don't you hold my hand much? You don't hold my hand. You don't kiss me. And I'm thinking, well, it's because we're talking to people. I mean, we're talking to people. We're just, you know, she goes, well, you don't think of me. Yes, I do. Well, you know, the reality is I didn't. I didn't think poorly ever. I was just on, okay? I was just on. I was in work mode. What needs to be done? How do I... And I just looked back and I thought, where was I during that decade? There was no intimacy in my life, really. But it's so characteristic of that time. We were so into finding our place in not good ways. The needs. Let's talk about the needs. Developing life structures. It's really important in your 30s here that you start to develop some life structures to make life work. I remember this guy who mentored me. He said, Gary, can I give you one really simple thing? Because he could see what was going on in my life. He said, just do me a favor. He said, you be home by 5:15 every day. You always have dinner together. Always. Just, you always have dinner together with your wife and children. And I thought, yeah, of course. But he knew me better enough, you know, and it's funny. He goes, no, I mean it. I mean it. I want you to do that. And I thought, this is shallow advice. Come on. I'm deeper than this. You're deeper than this. But you know what? He knew my life. And it started changing. All of a sudden, I was home, and we just have dinner together. My wife, my two kids at the time, and it really started to change things. Something that simple as a life structure thing actually made us start to talk, you know, more. You start learning some things about yourself, try it. Go try it. Offer it. See what happens. You need fathers in your life still, and you need brothers. Fathers who are ahead of you that come back and say, I've been there. Let me tell you what I've learned. Let me ask you some questions. And brothers who say, I'll walk through this with you. You and me together. We'll get through this. And then start to identify now the impact, that things that really have impact, that interest you. Okay, so I'm going to show you one last scene, and we're going to go into our groups. Tony Stark continues the weapons business, produces all these phenomenal weapons, cocky guy, gets captured by the enemy, almost loses his life. He readjusts things, comes back, and he says, I'm going to use my talents and abilities differently now. He doesn't walk away from his ability to engineer and create and all this. He doesn't walk away from it. He just says, I got to use it differently. Now comes the enemy. Now that he's doing this, the enemy comes in. What's really fascinating in the scene with the enemy is watch what the enemy attacks and steals. It's really amazing how the enemy comes in. What does he go after? His heart. That was that thing that, if you've seen the movie, this magnetic force and all that kept the shrapnel from that weapon penetrating his heart and everything else. He goes after his heart. Right, he's after extracting his heart. That's exactly what the enemy goes after our whole life. He just knows if he gets the heart of the man, he's got the man. He pulls that out, he can't function now. He's never going to fulfill his legacy, what he's here to do. Enemy goes after the heart because he knows that's where the power is right there. He wants to use the strength of Tony Stark for his own purposes, as the enemy does. And what's the other thing he goes to destroy? The woman. Too bad I have to kill Pepper now. He always goes after the woman. He goes after God's beloved, who is who we are. And he always goes after ours, the wife. I mean, that's why you see it universally in movies, because it's such a strong universal theme of reality. The enemy always goes after our heart. And that's what he's trying to do, because you're a man who's coming from your potential into your purpose as you grow older. And he's trying to stop that very same thing from happening in our life. One last point, because it helps give you eyes for what we're doing. We talked about the idea that we need fathers and brothers in our life, and that's in our 30s. One of the things that happened to me that was just life-changing for me was in my 30s, is where when I moved to Colorado, I met a man named Paul Stanley who mentored me for years, formally, literally, consistently, frequently mentored me, changed my life. His emphasis in his life, his calling, the effect of his life is what he calls developmental leadership. He believes that you lead by developing people. You don't just lead by making decisions, you develop the people around you. And so he started teaching me about how to develop people because it was his heart. So part of his glory got infused into me. And then at the same time, literally the same time, which is amazing, that's when I met Brent Curtis, who helped co-write The Sacred Romance. He was the one who really started introducing me to the whole idea of the heart. I mean, I didn't know the heart existed. And he's the one that started saying, do you realize there's something deeper about your life? And told me about the heart, how it works, and journeying in the heart. So God brought brothers and fathers into my life. And again, God is up to always bringing back to us what we need, whether we missed it back then or not.